Christy came to me last week and she said, Brad, I really think the Lord's telling me that you need to take this to the pulpit, that everybody needs to hear this. And so I prayed about it and I agreed that this is something that opened my eyes up and something that we have to get right. That there's no room for mistakes. So just a little history here. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 18. And we're going to be going through verses 1 through 9 is where we're going to be. So at this point in Matthew, the disciples, they've already met. Jesus asked them who he was, who they say he was. That's where Peter, or where Simon, become Peter. So, they've already been told what's going to happen. They've already been told about the crucifixion. So, and they're about, when this takes place, they're about a month out in the crucifixion. So, just a perspective where we're at in this. So, we're going to break this down. Could have done this in two sermons, but I'm going to break this down into two sections. First is going to be 1 through 6, which is who is the greatest. And then the second is going to be 7 through 9, which is the temptation to sin. So I can tell y'all, I'll be up front, this is a very, very tough teaching. It's tough to teach, and it's sure enough going to be tough to accept. People in my class, they kind of got a preview this morning. And so I told them that me and my wife was talking last night when I put all this together, and I said, I got the main parts in there, and I'm going to let the Holy Spirit fill in the details. So whatever we receive today came from him. It didn't come from me. So just remember that when we get into this, because I'm telling you, this is very, very tough teaching. So verse 1, at the time the disciples come to Jesus saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So, key words here. Children. Then never. So, picture this. The disciples come up and they're gathering around Jesus and they ask him, so who is the greatest? Everybody in our world now, everybody has an agenda, right? Everybody's trying to be in the forefront, right? Everybody wants to be that person. Everybody wants to be that guy that gets, 100,000 likes, right? Everybody wants to be the, everybody wants to be in the front, right? I mean, you can say you don't, but post something on Facebook and have somebody dislike it. See how much that devastates your day. You post something and somebody dogs on you. Right? Because we all want to be that person. We all want to be the lead. The person that somebody looks up to. Always kidding around, you know, back when I first started working, always wanted to be the boss. Always wanted to be the manager, you know. And I can tell you, beware what you ask for. If you've ever went into management, it ain't all what it's cracked up to be, right? It's just a whole nother can of worms you open. So they ask him, who's the greatest? Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? When you leave, who's going to take your place? Who's going to step up? I mean, you said you've been calling Peter out. He was Simon. You changed his name to Peter. We went with you to the mount and left all of us down here, and you took Peter, James, and John and went up on the mountain. And every one of them come back changed. So we just want to know who's the greatest. I mean, in Mark, it talks about they're traveling down the road arguing about this. Arguing amongst yourselves. Who's the greatest? Who's going to be the greatest? So the father takes, let's just say, a two-year-old kid, and he brings him up, and he puts him in front of him. Right in front of all of them. It says, truly I say to you, unless you become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Never. That's a strong word, right? There's no gray in that. You might not. No, you never. Right? So, let's break that down a little bit. What does a two-year-old child have that we don't? Why would the father say that? I'm an adult. Why do I need to be like a two-year-old child? I can tell you, as we go through this, nowhere in the Word, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, nowhere in the Word does it say you're an adult of God. Does it? Don't even sound right. We are children of God. Tell me, what are some of the things a two-year-old does on his own? Sleeps? Possibly. Gets into everything? Absolutely. Trust me, I got a little three-year-old at the house. He's my little mini-me. He's cool. But I can tell you, when Noah comes up and he's hungry, he don't go to his mom and say, Mom, I'm hungry. And my daughter don't tell him, hey, we'll go to the icebox and make a sandwich. Would you tell a two-year-old that? You would make them food, right? So, G-Ma, I want to do this. He relies on his caretaker, right? 100%. He don't have an agenda. He ain't trying to be the best. He ain't even trying to be right. Sometimes he thinks he is. But he relies 100% on his caretaker, right? Mom, I need to go to the potty. Now we got the light rigged up to where he turns the light on by himself. But he relies 100% on his caretaker. He don't have an agenda. He ain't trying to be first. He don't care what you like. All he cares about is what his mom thinks and G-Maw. That's all he cares about. Do you rely that much on your caretaker? Or let me ask, who is your caretaker? All you adults out there, is it you? I'm talking to y'all kids too. Is it you? Who do you rely on? Because it's pretty plain. You will never enter the kingdom of heaven. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of us that are going to know what that verse means when you step in front of the Father and he says, depart from me, for I never knew you. I don't care how many times you come to church and sit in a pew. I don't care how many times you put money in the offering. Were you his child? Did you depend on him? Maybe. Change it for me, Will. So, what does it mean? What does it mean to humble, to be humble? Sorry, I can't stand up there as much as I wanted to. What does it mean to humble yourself? Put God for yourself? No, you're not perfect, and you make mistakes, right? Be positive. Is it weakness? For anybody? Is it weakness? To look at yourself the way God sees you. To be humble means you got the order right. Correct? Who comes before him? No one. Period. Right? Or it should be. Or at least no one. So, I just want to make that clear. Humble does not mean weak. It does not mean weak. Whosoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. You depend 100% on your caretaker? Do you go to him for everything? Or do you take it on your own? Because trust me, like my little Noah, if you take it on your own, it don't work out so well. Most of the time, it don't work out well. Then he comes to the pawpaw. All right, next slide, Will. I can't change it. Technical difficulties. Imagine that. Maybe one of us in here is not getting it. Maybe it's me. Who knows? I just know when I heard this the first time, it hurt. Because I don't go to him with everything. I don't. That's not the way I was bred. I wouldn't bread that away. Matt laughs. He knows. Y'all got to think I've had 3 days worth of deja vu. Because me and Randy has been at my parents' for the last 3 days rebuilding my parents' bathroom. And I don't go to my parents' house very often. So when I go in there, it's like deja vu walking in the house, you know. Like, oh, man. Not very many good memories, a whole lot of bad ones. You know. But I have to tell myself I'm not that guy no more. Right? I'm not. No, you don't. Yep. Yep. I mean, how many times those of y'all that got jobs, I've been told this before, don't come to me with a problem, come to me with an answer. Right? Come to me with the solution. Or I pay you from the neck down. I mean, this is stuff I grew up with. Absolutely. But why is it so hard for us to get that? Does he trust me? Because we know best, right? Yeah, because we know best, right? I mean, we live like we're writing the rules, right? That's the way we live, right? like that book's wrote in pencil. Well, yeah, we'll just erase that one. We'll write this one in here. Yeah, we don't like that word. That's a little strong. It offends me. You know? Yeah. Yeah, it don't work that way. So let's get to the meat here. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. Whoever accepts one such child in my name, in his name, receives me. How many people have we not received? Receive? Oh. Whoever accepts one such child in my name receives me. Accepts me. How many people have we not accepted? How many people have we not received? You don't know who you're talking to. You have no idea if somebody, or if he puts somebody in front of you. You have no idea who you're talking to. I don't care how well you do know them. Because the words coming out of their mouth could be his. Right? But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Whoever causes one of these children that believes in him to sin, it's better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck and thrown in the depths of the ocean. To put it plain, it'd be better if you died. Just to show you. That's a millstone. That's a Roman millstone. Tie that around your neck and drop it in the ocean. If you lead one of them children to sin, Jesus said it would be better if you died. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not talking about just this child. I'm talking about his child, his children. How many times you led somebody to sin? We're fixing to get into 7 through 9. How many times you led somebody to sin? Directly or indirectly. Just by your actions. Trust me, I've been in positions where people look up to me. And they follow exactly the way I do things. Back then, that was scary. Because I set the example. Everybody I work with, all 10 of my rigs out there, they know what I'm doing today. So when I go back to work, do I have the ability to lead them to sin? Because they're looking at me. Right? So here we go. 7 through 9, we're talking about sin. This get a little ugly. It's going to get a little ugly. But all of chapter 18 is one sermon. It goes all together. People break it down, they teach it in sections because it's easier to teach. But when you read it, you have to read it all the way through. This part goes back to 6. So, woe to the world for temptations to sin. For it is necessary that the temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. Woe, it comes out twice. Who knows what woe means? Woe means to pass judgment or to be sorrowful. It can be either one. So think of verse 6. Think of verse 6 about leading one of his children to sin. What does he say first? Woe to the world. Woe to the world. Woe to you, government, for making us sin. Woe to you, phone, that leads me to sin. Woe to you. This goes back to Genesis 3. God will judge the world. That's judgment. Woe to the world. He's coming. He will judge. Period. For it is necessary that temptations come. It's necessary. Why is it necessary? Because of Genesis. Because of the fall. Sin's a part of all of us. Sin is bred in your blood. It comes natural. It comes more natural than following him. Right? But woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. Woe to the one that leads one of my children astray. I feel sorry for you. Put that in there. Woe. I feel sorry for you. Woe to be sorrowful or to pass judgment. So as we read 8 and 9, 8 and 9, as we read it, has nothing to do with physical dismemberment. I can tell you that. And if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off, throw it away. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. Hands and foot. Talking about sin here. This is stuff we practice. This is stuff you do. You name one thing you can do all day and not use your hands and feet. Besides sit on your hiney all day. We use these all day, right? This is stuff we practice. How many times we practice sin? Practice means you're trying to get better at it. We was talking about this earlier this morning. And as many times I come up here to the altar, there's things I come up here and I lay it in front of him that I've been laying up there since I was in high school. So do you think I practice them? And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire. So I hear. I represents your heart. These are sins you keep close. What would be some of the sins that you would keep close? Love? Lust? Hate? Say again? Bitterness? Relationships, yep. These are all things you keep close, right? These are my sins. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. See, everybody does it, right? Everybody does it. If everybody's doing it, it ain't a sin, right? Great. I'm glad you said that. I mean, you talk about that this week. And I'm going to group us all together. The church abuses grace. The church abuses grace. Let's talk a little bit about redemption. If you come up here and you lay something at the altar and you give it to him, I'm sorry doesn't work. I'm sorry when you get in front of him and you throw your sin in front of him and you say, I'm sorry, God. How much, if I tell you that, how much value does that have? Zero. What are you going to tell me? Prove it with your actions. I don't want to hear I'm sorry. Prove it. So if you're walking along and you see that sin and God tells you to stop, if you're going to redeem, you turn another direction. Or repent. If you repent, you turn the other direction from it. You just don't keep walking. Here, I'll step over that. That's not repenting. Repenting is not, I'm sorry. Repenting is, I'm not going there. I'm going this direction. Right? So how many sins do you actually come up here and lay in front of him? How many sins you keep in your back pocket? That way you got quick access to them. Right? Take all these back to verse 6 in the millstone. How serious was that? When Jesus says, it would be better if you died than lead somebody to sin. Now you know why this got my attention? You know how many people I've led to sin? I've been that guy. And I ain't bragging. I ain't proud of nothing I've done. But if we plan on walking through them pearly gates, you better read 18. Because this is real. And just another funny little disclaimer. Chapter 18, who is he talking to in this? Believers, right? Who is he talking to? He's talking to his disciples, his inner circle, his closest. At this point, they walked with him for 3 years. That's how long Jesus' ministry was. He's about a month out. They walked with him for 3 years. And he just told them, if you don't get this right, you ain't going. Right? You're going, you're going to go somewhere else. Depart from me, for I never knew you. You practicers of iniquities. I don't care how many times you walk through these doors and check the box. Checking the box ain't going to get you to heaven. better check the box. I have a relationship with him. I depend on him. And I urge you to humble yourself before him before he humbles you. Because if he wants to get your attention, he will humble you. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Let's go. So, whoever knows the right thing. That's James. For if you know the right thing to do and you don't do it, that's a sin. James 4:17. Just went through, I got one more study, and I'll be through James on a devotional this week. It's been phenomenal. I urge y'all to look it up. You can probably look it up on YouTube. Francis Chan walks through James. It's super, super good study. Super good study. That opens up a whole new amount of sin, don't it? Yep. If you know the right thing to do and you don't do it, that's a sin. Anything that comes between you and the Father, that's a sin. Nothing comes before him. Nothing. You take everything to him. You depend on him. I can tell you, he gave me a couple of good examples this morning. I'm going to share them again. I had a really, really dear friend passed away last fall. We worked together 30-something years. He was a really, really close friend of mine. And me and Randy went to his celebration of life. And I can tell y'all, when we got there, bless you. I can tell y'all when we got there, there wasn't nobody worried about what truck he was driving. There wasn't nobody in that room worried about how much money he had left in his bank account. There wasn't nobody in that room worried about what bills he didn't pay. There wasn't nobody worried about what he did last week with me on the field. And he was in an urn about this big. What do you think he took with him? He didn't take anything. Not none of that crap that we work every day for. That we put all that stuff before him, before God. And that's what he was in. I have full faith and trust. My buddy's up there dancing. But we worked. Me and him worked so hard our whole career chasing that almighty dollar. I mean, me and him's left Odessa when we was on the same crew and not come home for months. Never even see a town. Spend months in the field together. All chasing that almighty dollar. he left overnight, had a heart attack on his couch. Wife found him the next morning. There he is now. And he didn't take anything with him. So what's more important than God? Nothing. Quit putting everything before him. This is stuff we got to get right. You know why Jesus was telling the disciples this? What does Matthew 28:19 say? Somebody read it for me. I want to hear it word for word. I don't care what version. No, 28:19. Matthew 28:19. That's what Jesus told the church. That is the only thing Jesus told the church to do. Period. We are the church. This is a building. We are the church. If you don't get 18 right, if you don't get 18 right, what kind of example are you showing? What kind of discipleship are you showing? That's why Jesus told the disciples this. Because this is what we got to get right before we do that. Before we can even step out and do that. Because if we don't put him first, why is she going to listen to what I got to say? You ain't putting him first. Why do I have to be any different? I'm telling you, man, this is something. My class, we're going to be on this probably till the fall. we got a lot more verses to go. This is something I absolutely 100% knew somebody in this room needed to hear this. And I don't care how many people we got in here, we got the amount of people God wanted here. I don't care if it's here or there. Somebody need to hear this. And this is stuff we have to get right. This is foundational. This is the foundation. So humble yourselves before God and he will lift you up. James 4:10. I can tell y'all, like I was saying, me and Randy have been my parents' house the last 3 days. I got to go back this afternoon and finish rebuilding my mom and dad's bathroom. And you get in there, and man, it was a mess. It was a train wreck. So you start tearing stuff off the walls, you know, getting it down to where you can start from fresh, you know. And you get all the walls stripped down to nothing, and you're looking and you're seeing, holy crap, this is a mess. I mean, termites eating up the studs, eating up the rafters, you know. It's a mess. But by the time I leave this, by the time we leave this afternoon, it's going to be beautiful. But I didn't change any of the studs. I didn't change the roof. But you'll be able to walk in there and it'll be beautiful. My mom's going to love it. But I didn't change anything on the inside. I can fix up all the outside all you want. I can put the face on when I walk in the door. But I didn't change anything on the inside. How many times you start a project like that and you realize you got to take it to the foundation? And I ain't talking about construction. How many times you got in your prayer closet and you realize that crap, I got a mess. You start giving this stuff to him. By the time you walk out of there, you're naked because you ain't got nothing else. You got to start from the foundation. Sometimes we got to take it to the foundation. At least when you take it to the foundation, you know what you got. You know what you're built on. I'm telling you, sin's a big deal. And it's bred in you. You can't get away from it. It's in your blood. Jesus paid the price for it, but it's still in you. He'll forgive you, but you can't get away from it. Recognize it, repent, turn from it. Because there, we just read the price. Think about that when you're making decisions this week. Because a lot of the stuff, a lot of the sin you're going to see comes natural. It's stuff you do every day. I urge you, get in your prayer closet and ask him, God, anything comes between me and you, take it away. And then go through that week and see how much stuff he takes away. I've been there when I was the only one left standing in the room. Because he'll take it away. Quick. He will show you what you're putting before him. So, I urge y'all, thank you. I'll be back. We'll be back in chapter 18 in May, because April, we'll all be together. Thank y'all. You want to put some music on, Will?